right now, what Alaska's doing, up at least in North Slope, is we're pushing our gas back into the ground, and we'd rather put it to market. And so we want to figure out how to do that the most effective and efficient way.
Looking for new markets for Alaska gas. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a verdict in the killing of a Juno man.
It was just a senseless act of violence done to a young man that had never been in any trouble, nor did he do anything to provoke this violence.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. A PFD reminder, check the status of your 2012 PFD application with MyPFD info online at pfd.alaska.gov. You can view or change your voluntary deductions until Friday, August 31st. This message sponsored by the state of Alaska.
Dutton Publishing Company announced this week that they will be releasing a book written by a former Navy SEAL from Alaska about the killing of Osama bin Laden. Fox News revealed the author's identity this morning. KSTK's Ann Hillman in Wrangell found out more.
On Thursday morning, Fox News outed the author of No Easy Day, the first-hand account of the mission that killed Osama bin Laden. The AP and NPR have all confirmed that former Alaskan resident Matt Bissonnette penned the book under the pseudonym Mark Owens. Bissonnette never lived in Wrangell, as the Fox article alleges, but his father was the magistrate here from 1998 to 2004. Greg Knight of the Wrangell Sentinel researched, and it has been confirmed, that Bissonnette graduated from Antioch High School in 1994. Most recently, Bissonnette lived in Virginia Beach. He was a member of SEAL Team 6, which conducted the operation against bin Laden. In the summer of 2011, he honorably separated from the SEALs. He did not retire. The book will be released by Dutton Books on September 11th and was not vetted by any government officials. The CIA is not providing interviews about the book or its possible implications for national security. In a statement, CIA spokesperson Preston Golson said, quote, "The CIA isn't offering any comment on the identity of the author. As far as we can determine, this book was not submitted for pre-publication review," unquote. Christine Ball with Dutton Books would not confirm Bissonnette was the author. In a statement, she wrote that the author's identity is being withheld for his personal security and that writing the book was a courageous act. The exact content of the book has not been released. In Wrangell, I'm Ann Hillman.
Senator Mark Begich wants to know if Alaska can develop a natural gas export industry. Begich invited state business leaders to a roundtable discussion today to examine opportunities for the state's gas resource. Any future for a gas export industry will rely on finding markets, and Begich is exploring where the potential buyers of the state's gas could be. Hawaii and Japan are two areas that may provide a market, and representatives of both countries entities sat at the table, along with representatives of Cook Inlet Region Incorporated, Buccaneer, Tote Ocean Transport, and Alaska Village Electric Cooperative. Mark Begich.
Right now, what Alaska's doing, up at least in North Slope, is we're pushing our gas back into the ground, and we'd rather put it to market. And so we want to figure out how to do that the most effective and efficient way. And are there customers that we can tap into now that may have unique relationships with us? Japan being one of them because of the market relationships that Alaska has, but also because of the military defense relationships we have.
Japan is looking to expand its energy imports since the March 2011 earthquake and nuclear power disaster. Dale Hahn, an energy advisor to the state of Hawaii, said her state is committed to looking seriously to natural gas. Electricity rates in Hawaii are 3 to 4 times greater than on the mainland, and the state's electrical utility operators are under federal EPA mandates to reduce exhaust emissions by switching to lower sulfur fuels. Bob Eisler represents Hawaiian Electric.
80% of our capacity right now is running on petroleum oil. So we're looking to reduce that amount by two means. One, a lot of renewables. We're looking to be 40% renewable in 2030. But the rest of that needs to be something. And we'd like that to be the cleanest, cheapest option available to us, and we think gas is a good option there.
Some drawbacks to an export plan include competing natural gas resources from Qatar to New Guinea. Bill Popp with the Anchorage Economic and Development Corporation says a larger strategy needs to be examined beyond LNG export to bring together industrial and utility users both inside and outside Alaska. High electricity costs are no stranger to rural Alaska, according to Mira Kohler, president of the Rural Village Electric Cooperative, which is examining in-state uses for natural gas.
We're looking very hard right now at developing natural gas-fired mega high-efficiency generation at the North Slope and then transporting that by wire and using it to support our industry across the state. We have resource extraction, development, processing that does not occur in the state because we are so strapped for affordable energy. That this is a concept that we're working on right now. We've been presenting around the state on it. And I think the Cook Inlet solution is going to address the South Central issue, but it's not going to address the issue of Fairbanks and around the state.
Alaska has an estimated 200 trillion cubic feet of natural gas proven and potential reserves. Begich said discussions on its export value started a year ago. 2 years ago, when Governor Parnell signed the Cook Inlet Recovery Act, prospects were bright for gas supplies in Cook Inlet. And for the first time in several years, residents of South Central Alaska weren't worried about whether they would endure energy shortages during coming winters. Now, some of the elements of that law are not falling into place. But early supporters say the plan is still holding together. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The Cook Inlet Recovery Act devised a way for gas producers to build and fill an underground gas storage facility to allow users to deposit gas during the summer when there's little local use for it and withdraw it during the winter when supplies run dangerously near empty. It offered free rent on the state land for 10 years. It also offered exploration incentives to get more gas into the system. And it offered regulatory assistance for buyers and sellers to come up with supply contracts. The plan was sponsored by Anchorage Republican Mike Hawker. And a storage facility has been developed, and Hawker says there are enough reserves on hand to cover this coming winter. But a problem's come up between Marathon and Enstar, Anchorage's gas utility, over filling that facility. The price of the gas that goes into it is the issue. Hawker says the supply will not be available at, quote, peak efficiency.
The effect on the consumer is that efficiency is defined in terms of the cost of the gas at the burner tip for folks in South Central Alaska. There's just no question. We in our community have enjoyed some of the cheapest natural gas rates in North America for many years, and our market is starting to sort of normalize, and prices are going up. Enstar is doing their very best to protect the consumer and did not want to sign up for the price that Marathon and other producers wanted to provide gas at.
He says the negotiations are not a legislative matter, but talks are going on with an eye on market prices that fluctuate.
Marathon wants to get essentially the same price they can get exporting the gas to the Asian markets. Enstar wants to pay the much lower price that they paid when we had an excess of gas. You know, it's a classic supply and demand. And that really becomes the ultimate issue, is negotiating a fair and reasonable market price.
Several lawmakers are trying another approach to assuring a supply for the underground storage facility. Anchorage Democrat Berta Gardner signed on to a letter to the governor calling on the Parnell administration to use that federal export license as a tool to participating in the negotiations. The state has the right to oppose the license, and the absence of a federal extension could end exports. Gardner says the state now has no legal, no statutory authority over the market, but must rely on promises the local needs will be met. She says suppliers have always been able to keep that commitment, but have never done more than agree to a non-binding term of service. She says Democrats want at least that level of commitment again.
We support the export of gas in part because it creates a market for explorers and producers when they know that the market for gas they find is bigger than just South Central Alaska. We just want to make sure that in the event that we need it for heat here ourselves, we have it. That's a critical use.
ConocoPhillips declined to comment on the concerns with the statement, quote, "No decisions have been made on the future of the LNG plant, nor its export license." The governor's office replied that state officials met with the companies involved and are optimistic the issue will be resolved. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, improving safety for commercial fishermen.
They get caught up and wrapped, and once they get wrapped, they can't reach the controls to shut down the winch.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
Two Hot Springs County, Arkansas teenagers have been sentenced to prison for the 2011 death of a 19-year-old Juneau man. Kevin Thornton, a 2010 Thunder Mountain High School graduate, was visiting in the South last July when he fell victim to assault. He died of his injuries a week later. Upon his death, three teenage boys were charged with second-degree murder in adult criminal court. Two of the youth entered negotiated guilty pleas yesterday to the charges in court in Malvern. A third teen in the case pleaded guilty to a reduced charge of aggravated assault and was placed on probation. 7th Judicial District Circuit Judge Ed Kuhn sentenced Richard Shelby Wybark and Timothy Tyler Norwood, both 18, to a term of 20 years each in the Arkansas Department of Corrections. Kuhn sentenced 17-year-old Clinton LaVon Ross to 5 years of supervised probation. At the time of the incident, Wybark was 17, Norwood and Ross were 16. According to a probable cause statement accepted as fact by the court, Norwood struck Thornton one time and knocked him to the ground unconscious. Wybark repeatedly kicked Thornton in the head and face, then dragged him into a roadside ditch. Ross did not strike Thornton, but chased a second victim who was uninjured. Hot Spring County Sheriff's investigators called Thornton's assault a case of complete random violence. Prosecutor Eddie Aisley echoed the thought.
It was just a senseless act of violence done to a young man that had never been in any trouble, nor did he do anything to provoke this violence. They just picked him out at random. Our plea today, our only hope is for the family. We know they're grieving. They've cooperated with us greatly. They're good people. We hope that what happened today will bring them some type of closure and maybe just a little peace.
Before the three were escorted from the courtroom, Darlene Thornton, Kevin's mother, addressed the three teens. Mrs. Thornton told the teens they had taken away the life of her son, the future they had looked forward to, and robbed Kevin's sister of the brother she loved so much.
Kevin's death has been devastating to our whole family. It has hit us all emotionally, financially, and some of us physically. Only time will justice truly be served.
The maximum sentence Wybark and Norwood would have faced was 30 years. Under current sentencing guidelines, they must serve half of their 20-year sentences before they will be eligible for parole, less credit earned for good time. In next Tuesday's primary race, Congressman Don Young will be defending his 40-year tenure as Alaska's lone U.S. House member against two Republican challengers and five Democrats also vying for the seat. John Cox and Tarie Gales are his Republican challengers. John Cox says he came to Alaska in the early 70s and spent nearly 30 years in the Navy. He first challenged Young in 2010 and is back again, saying Alaska and the nation needs new direction. Tarie Gales is also a veteran. He served in Iraq. He also says the state and country need a new path forward. Both men say spending and the deficit must be reined in. But when asked if the automatic cuts to the Pentagon slated for January should be allowed to go forward, John Cox says no.
It seems like every time that they want to balance the budget, they take it on the backs of the U.S. military. And that's wrong. If you look at a high school, you got the kid in the block that's the biggest kid. He never gets in a fight. Why? Because people are afraid of him. And that's why I believe in a strong military.
Tari Gale says the road to fiscal and economic strength is through strong leadership.
And when people can see a clear path set before them, it's a lot easier for folks to get on board with what we're doing. And we got to present it to the American people in a way that makes sense. So I'll do that by just providing excellent leadership. And that's something that I've shown as a veteran in the military for so long.
Don Young, his voice hoarse from campaigning, says his leadership works because he knows what Alaskans want.
Because I get it from the Alaskans. And my job primarily has been to represent Alaskans, each and every one of them, even those that disagree with me. And I've done some things in Congress that, very frankly, hasn't done by other congressmen. And you see, I've been heavily criticized over that over the years, but I get it done.
The three Republicans agree on many issues. On health care, all three say the Affordable Care Act should be repealed. On the issue of climate change, none of them adhere to beliefs that changes are anything other than natural cycles. When it came to Social Security and whether or not the eligibility age should be raised, John Cox said it doesn't matter.
This country is financially broke. And no matter what we do, unless we balance the budget, all these other issues aren't going to matter. We need to balance the budget right now. And we're going to have to make sacrifices across the board. And until we balance this budget, Social Security, Medicare, everything else will not matter.
Tari Gales disagreed, saying it matters to the people depending on it. Gales likes the idea of gradually raising the eligibility age in small increments.
So folks that are retiring in let's say, 2014 or 2016 will have to add another 2 months, so 65 and 2 months before they can start collecting benefits. And this is said to actually save quite a bit of money as far as Social Security goes, but we still need to work on actually fixing the problem. But that's just a quick measure that we can take.
Don Young agrees the age will have to be raised, saying part of the problem stems from the inception of the Social Security program when the average lifespan of Americans was shorter.
We live a lot longer now, and we work a lot longer. We can contribute a lot longer, so it has to be raised. And I don't know what gives it done immediately. I can't say that. Or is it done, as the gentleman said, in 2 months or every 2 years, that type thing. But we have to face up. If we want it solvent for the future generations, then we have to raise that age.
None of the candidates were in support of federal dollars being spent on private charter schools. All would seek to overturn Roe versus Wade, the law legalizing abortion, and all would vote to increase military spending. But when asked whether or not the U.S. would still be in Afghanistan in six decades, similar to the 60 years of U.S. military presence in Korea, they answered Anchorage journalist Michael Carey this way.
Mr. Gale.
No.
Mr. Young?
No.
And Mr. Cox?
Yes.
Next Tuesday is the primary. Tomorrow we'll hear from the Democratic challengers for U.S. House. You can hear much more from all of the candidates tomorrow evening on Debate for the State, offered statewide. Check your local public broadcasting station for the schedule.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, NA. And by Grant Station, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com.
During this past legislative session, Senator Liesl McGuire has honed in on creating policies that support natural resource and renewable energy development. McGuire has served a dozen years, and she is currently the youngest senator in Juneau. She's being challenged by fellow Republican Jeff Landfield in the primary. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
Senator Liesl McGuire is just finishing up a campaign event at Papago Field near Arctic and Sea Streets in South Anchorage.
We had neighbors out here today for ice cream, just to catch up and talk about what's going on.
She wants to work with the community to improve roads and clean up parks. Through redistricting, she traded out the Sand Lake area for the Arctic and Sea Street and Taku Lake areas near Papago Field. McGuire has a special interest in preventing crime and protecting children. She chaired the House Judiciary Committee from 2003 to 2006 to make things tougher for criminals, especially those that prey on kids. But recently she shifted a lot of her focus to energy issues. She agrees with Governor Sean Parnell that the state must lower taxes on oil companies.
First, there's the Trans-Alaska Pipeline as an immediate focus. That's 90% of our economy. And right now, we're down to 523,000 barrels a day. It is our lifeline, our economic lifeline for sure. And even though there's a need to diversify our economy, that is something we've got to focus on right away. So I think getting a tax structure in place that will attract more investment to the state is number one priority for me.
She's also for building an in-state natural gas pipeline and on marketing that gas to Asia. But she's not all oil and gas all the time. One thing that she's proud of is having created some funds to begin diversifying Alaska's economy. One is an emerging energy tech fund.
My dream is that Alaska can become a place where those bright minds out there will come and say, let's try our energy technology in a place that has such high energy costs as sort of a laboratory.
On forward funding for the Anchorage School District, McGuire says that would help, and she'll keep pushing for it. But she's quick to add that after that, it's up to the district to get better results. And that means looking at teachers and classrooms.
I think that we should pay our teachers well. And I do feel like they should be shown some support for those supplies. I also really feel that there is an issue going on with respect to crowding in the classrooms. And I do think we're going to have to look at that.
McGuire says she'll also keep pushing to increase the base student allocation. On affordable housing, she says legislators simply have to find ways to increase the supply.
Are there some grants out there? Are there federal grants, some innovative partnerships that we can do? We've done it downtown. We've done it in some of the areas where there are blighted properties and, you know, Section 8 housing and things like that. But we haven't really done it in South Anchorage. We haven't done it in the places where people really want to live.
She says more affordable, perhaps mixed-use housing must be considered throughout Anchorage, adding it's particularly critical for single women, veterans, and young families. She says she'll also make access to healthcare a priority, especially for kids. McGuire says the challenges in education, housing, and healthcare show the state and Anchorage in particular are behind when it comes to addressing a growing and changing population.
We're trying to catch up to the city that we've become. And so we're just going to have to sit down and, you know, and spend some time collecting our resources.
Liesl McGuire will appear on the primary ballot running against fellow Republican Jeff Landfield on August 28th. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
One of the soldiers accused in the hazing-related death of a Fort Wainwright Army private has been demoted and forced to forfeit part of his pay. Sergeant Travis Carden was punished at Fort Bragg in a summary court-martial. He was demoted to specialist and must forfeit two-thirds of his pay for 1 month. Carden was not represented by a military lawyer at Wednesday's proceeding. Carden was convicted of hazing and maltreating Private Danny Chen. He's the fourth soldier assigned to the 1st Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division at Fort Wainwright, Alaska, to be punished in Chen's death last October in Afghanistan. A commercial fishing safety program that's been a huge success in Alaska is turning its focus to commercial fleets in the Gulf of Mexico and the East Coast. But expanding requires money, and as KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, NIOSH may not have much of that in the future.
When NIOSH started investigating injuries to Alaskan seiners a few years ago, they found a common theme. Researchers were able to trace countless instances of crushing, amputation, and drowning, all back to getting tangled up in the net.
They get caught up and wrapped, and once they get wrapped, they can't reach the controls to shut down the winch.
That's Chelsea Woodward, one of four researchers on NIOSH's commercial fishing safety team. Woodward is the engineer. It was his job to design a simple tool based on NIOSH's SANER research. He came up with a design for an emergency kill switch that would quickly stop the net from winding up. The fishermen who tested the kill switch on their SANE boats liked it, and that kill switch is now sold commercially in a kit. Woodward says Alaska fishermen are ideal research subjects. They're willing to collaborate and provide input on NIOSH's research and gear designs.
This is a good place because of the understanding the commercial fishermen have with NIOSH. there's a better understanding that NIOSH is not regulatory. We have their best interest in mind.
But Woodward says fishermen outside Alaska don't always understand that NIOSH is a research agency. It doesn't deal in law enforcement, and it's totally separate from OSHA, which can hand out fines for safety violations. That's just one reason why NIOSH may face an uphill battle as it embarks on an eastbound safety campaign. NIOSH wants to start sharing its research on commercial fishing safety in Alaska with fishermen in the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic Ocean. Eventually, Woodward says he'd like to see his safety tools on those vessels, too.
We can take the solutions that have been developed jointly with commercial fishermen in Alaska and see if they're a good fit for the East Coast scallopers or draggers.
But the commercial fishing safety team is already stretched thin. Bob Kehoe is the executive director of the Purse Seine Vessel Owners Association in Seattle. Kehoe worked with NIOSH researchers a few years back when he invited them to give a presentation at one of his conferences.
That is a struggle for them. You know, they try to do with a limited budget to go out and travel and get to know groups and fishermen themselves. But that is that takes time, and you know, you can only reach so many people.
NIOSH is committed to its Alaska fishing research, and they'll keep that up even as they start expanding to the Gulf and East Coast this fall. They may hire a few temporary assistants to help out, but Kehoe's right. The NIOSH team's time is at a premium, and so is money. NIOSH's budget has been threatened several times over the years, and it's happening again. The White House has released a proposed 2013 budget that cuts all money for NIOSH research on commercial fishing, forestry, and agriculture. Woodward says his agency is taking this threat seriously. But for now, the federal budget still isn't finalized. And until NIOSH knows exactly how much money they have to work with, they're pushing forward.
We'll work as hard and as diligent as we can to continue. And because good things are coming from it, we have to have the faith that the powers that be will recognize that and the rest of it will fall into place.
And maybe if they can show fishermen and the federal government that there's more work to be done, these researchers will make it through another year. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman in Wrangell, Ellen Lockyer and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Rosemary Alexander in Juneau, and Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska. APRN's Dave Donaldson also reported from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Doyon Limited, celebrating 40 years as Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
And by
Era Alaska. For more than 30 years, Era Alaska has been transporting packages across the state, business documents, medical supplies, even family pets. More details at flyera.com or talk to your local Era Alaska agent. Era Alaska, bringing Alaskans together.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.